Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording from our May 1st to May 3rd, 2020 True Refuge Retreat. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
Then we can begin. I wanted to talk for a few minutes about this sutta, the Sariputta Sutta, the cessation of ignorance. I think there's a couple of things that deserve some clarification with regards to this talk. And one of them is that it's not a talk from the Buddha. It's actually a talk, a teaching from Sariputta to Ananda. And I think that's important for a few reasons. One, it speaks to the efficacy of the Dhamma, that an authentic Dhamma was transmitted from an awakened mind in the Buddha to Venerable Sariputta, who we'll hear about in just a minute or two. And the teaching still lives through Sariputta, and he's going to transmit it, so to speak, to Ananda here. And Ananda's in a bit of a confused position. We've come to know him through the Dhamma, and he often finds himself in these positions. And I will elaborate on that as well. Again, I think it's good for clarifying to introduce this sutta. So, Venerable Sariputta has left us with quite a dense, pithy, profoundly meaningful teaching here. This is definitely a hardwood teaching. Much to be extracted from this, from the Dhamma, from Sariputta, and we'll take a closer look at that. I think it's important to talk about the cast of characters, Sariputta. We've heard of him. He is the one of two chief monks that the Buddha recognized, and he's a lifelong friend of the other chief monk, Moggallana. He was known as the general of the Dhamma, and he was a very strict elder monastic. He actually invented the rules of the monastery. So this was a very important figure in the Dhamma. He performed many of the primary duties for the Buddha, looking after the monks, teaching the Dhamma, clarifying specific inquiries, and a very unique piece here that deserves some investigation, assigning objects for meditation. Now, initially, when I came across that, I just passed it over. Objects for meditation. Maybe he's passing out a sack of lemons to these guys. And started to think, well, maybe not. Sariputta was also referred to as the mother who gives birth to a child, and Moggallana as the nurse who raises the child when regards to teaching others. He was able to cure specific symptoms or specialties, and that's why the Buddha relied on him. Two weeks after taking his vows and being ordained, he was said to have awoken. Now, our other character is Ananda. Ananda is an interesting character. We'll talk about him throughout the sutta and at the end, an interesting piece. He was the chief attendant to the Buddha, one of the core 10 monk followers in the Sangha. He stood out with the best memory of all the other monks. He was a supreme intellect. He was a very, very smart man. His erudition and his great intellect were known. He had a word perfect memory, recollected the Dhamma for the first Buddhist council, and we'll find out that's very important. He was beloved for his service to the Buddha, his compassion, generosity of the Sangha, and he actually amended the rules for the monastics to allow women later, is what I found out, and again, not to go into accuracy. But again, he has, we have encountered him, and he has some murkiness on the Dhamma. And as we'll go here into this talk, we'll see that Venerable Sariputta is going to teach him a little something here. Sariputta Sutta, the Cessation of Ignorance, from the Anguttara Nikaya. On one occasion, Venerable Ananda visited Venerable Sariputta. They exchanged courteous greetings, and Ananda took a seat next to his friend. Ananda asked a question. Dear friend, could one develop concentration to the point that they would not be sensitive to the earth or the elements of the earth? And now there's a modifier that's important, not be sensitive to perception of the earth or the elements of the earth. I think it's important for clarification. Could one develop concentration to the point that they would not be sensitive to the infinitude of space or of consciousness? Could one develop concentration to the point that they would not be sensitive to nothingness or neither perception nor non-perception? could one develop concentration to the point that they would not be sensitive to this world or the next world? Would this one still be sensitive to the current? Quite a question from Ananda. Again, shows the depth of his knowledge, his mind, the way he works. He knows a lot. We'll continue. Words. Yes, dear friend Ananda, even with great concentration, this one could be sensitive to what is occurring. Please explain how one could develop concentration so that they would not be sensitive to the earth or to this world or to the next world and still be sensitive to what is occurring. Let me explain. On one occasion, I was here in Savatthi at the Blind Man's Grove. I developed concentration to the point that I was neither sensitive to the earth or to this world or to the next world, and yet I continued to be sensitive to what is occurring. Please tell me, dear friend Sariputta, what were you sensitive to at that time? Ananda, I was sensitive to the cessation of becoming. I was sensitive to an unbinding. I was sensitive to the arising and passing away of all phenomena. Now, let's just add the little modifiers that John and what we do when we restore these teachings and give them some vibrancy. I was sensitive to this. I'm going to read that again. The words of the Sariputta Sutta. Ananda, I was sensitive to the cessation of becoming. In our context, we know that this is becoming further ignorant of Four Noble Truths, as Teacher Jen has, you know, led us to this point. I was sensitive to unbinding. Sensitive to what? Unbinding of views ignorant of Four Noble Truths. Sensitive to unbinding refers to the second noble truth of abandoning craving and clinging. I was sensitive to the arising and passing away of all phenomena. That we can infer from that is cessation. Sensitive to the arising and passing away of eye making. Just as a wood fire's flames arise and pass away, I was sensitive to unbinding from wrong views. Now, again, that's the end of the talk, the sutta. Very dense, not a lot of words, but as we can sort of see here, Sariputta is doing a very good job of bringing Ananda's focus back to what's fit for attention. And as Jen was explaining before, on a beautiful landscape journey. She did such a great job eloquently explaining the Buddha's encounters with the Dhamma and awakening and whether he was going to teach or not. Really, really great job there and heartwarming. We've come to the four foundations of mindfulness, as Teacher Jen has done such a great job introducing. And we can refer to the Satipatthana Sutta, where the Buddha explains the four foundations of mindfulness. And they are necessary for the purification all beings, for the statement. When we develop four foundations of mindfulness in our jhana practice, we are purifying our thoughts from wrong, or as we know, self-referential views. We become profoundly aware of impermanence and have the initial wisdom to understand Four Noble Truths. So let's refer to the Satipatthana Sutta on the four foundations of mindfulness and jhana. And this is just going to be we're not going to go into the entire sutta. It's a very lengthy sutta. And I know that some of you like to follow along, but this is not going to get too far out there. We're just going to simply recap the four foundations of mindfulness. I'll read a little bit of the Satipatthana Sutta to do that. Friends, there are four frames of reference, four foundations of mindfulness that are required for the purification of all beings. For the overcoming of sorrow and regret, for the disappearance of pain and distress, for establishing the right method of practice, and for complete unbinding. That word again. What are these four? Being mindful of the breath and the body, being mindful of feelings arising from the sixth sense base, being mindful of thoughts arising from the sixth sense base, and being mindful of the present quality of mind. There's some other important words that I would like to use out of that sutta as well to continue. He does this. He says, determined and alert and abandoning craving and aversion to what is occurring. That's unbinding. So we're mindful of our mind, we're mindful of our thoughts, we're mindful of our feelings, and we're mindful of our breath. We practice meditation to increase concentration and gain familiar experience with calm and a calm mind state. We get to know our own mind. It's pretty great. And Buddha will explain, Sariputta will continue to explain this as we go into this. And this teaching, as we've said earlier, is Sariputta is giving birth here for Ananda to a heartwood teaching. That's what this is symbolic of. He's taking his mind, which is aiming out into some very vast areas, and he's drawing his focus back to where it needs to be, to what we actually hold in mind. And when I said earlier, an object of meditation, when we think object, I initially didn't really think of that. But when we think of an object of meditation, that's a clue here for mindfulness. What are we actually holding in our mind during our meditation, right? And as we come to work on this, we're holding in mind release, unbinding. So we quiet our minds so we're able to acknowledge the source of fabrications through a variety of strategies and internal thought processes. These are summarized in the teachings on dependent origination from the Paticca-Samuppada Vibhanga Sutta by the Buddha. These are all results of thinking rooted in ignorance. With mindful awareness, we now have some space between our thoughts to see the process of these self-referential views forming, as described in what John just said last night, the Nagara Sutta. We see this name and form aggregate, this anatta, and its formation in every thought, word, and deed with contact with the world. We're able to see it when we start to calm our minds a little. And in the Paticca-Samuppada Vibhanga Sutta, as I said, on dependent origination, the Buddha explains that ignorance is the requisite condition for the origination of what? Dukkha. And more specifically, ignorance is responsible for fabrications. It's the first piece of the chain. From ignorance as a requisite condition come fabrications. Those are the words from the Paticca-Samuppada Vibhanga Sutta. We have a long list, we have a chain that we all know about. We know that from fabrications come consciousness, name and form, sixth sense base, contact, feeling, craving, clinging, maintaining, becoming, and birth, and so on. The point here, as I'm drawing out, is that from ignorance as a requisite condition come fabrications, the words of the Buddha. And now, from the remainderless stating and cessation of ignorance come cessation of fabrications. So we can see here that by applying our effort and concentration to our meditation practice, we're able to notice the quality of our minds. We practice on our cushions and as we go out into the world. This is the useful application of the four foundations of mindfulness. As practice continues and concentration deepens, jhana, or states of meditative absorption, become more familiar and continued. With continued practice, one can recognize the process of dependent origination, the formation of fabrications, and fabricated views of self, which are rooted in ignorance. We can now recognize this. We're able to notice the arising and the passing away of impermanent feelings and thoughts.
Come here.
These are the second and third foundations of mindfulness. Experience cessation. Cessation of ignorance and cessation of becoming further. We've now experienced the Four Noble Truths and are developing a profound or awakened right view. We've experienced the cessation of birth or the further moments rooted in ignorance, at least for the time we have. And this, as we said, we go back to the sutta, to what Sariputta said to Ananda in the very beginning. I was sensitive to the cessation of becoming. So when you say sensitive, again, we can come back to, it's a confusing word, but now we're starting to understand what it means. It means being mindful, the right application of mindfulness as we've been talking about here. So now when we're sensitive to this process of becoming further ignorant of Four Noble Truths, we can move on to the last part, or the next, second part, excuse me, of Sariputta's explanation here. We are sensitive to unbinding. Unbinding from views ignorant of Four Noble Truths. We were explaining earlier that these views are bound together in ignorance. These are views of anatta that want to be made permanent in an impermanent environment. We notice the arising and passing away and are able to practice restraint with our own minds and become aware of the process of fabrication and construction of it. The wisdom of right view, we understand that restraint applies to our thoughts as well as our actions. When we notice the quality of our minds in the fourth foundation of mindfulness, we allow life to occur as life occurs. We do not have a compulsion anymore to instinctually react or insert anatta, our name and form aggregate, into thoughts, words, deeds, and actions. We actually can have spaciousness and have an auspicious day and actually have an experience with cessation, with awakening. This, when we live in the world as phenomena arise and phenomena pass away, live a fulfilling, peaceful life, and continue to practice the Eightfold Path. The state of calm abiding known as equanimity, the Buddha refers to when speaking of the fourth state of jhana, is a mind state of ease with what is occurring, an ease of being, an ease of a joyful release of wrong views from moment to moment. Sariputta's practice deserves some elaboration, and the Magga-Vibhanga Sutta, which is a sutta on the elaboration of the actual Eightfold Path, is helpful here. This speaks directly to jhana meditation as taught by the Buddha. And I apologize that you don't have this to follow along, but I will try and keep it for you too. And what is right meditation? The words of the Buddha from the Magga-Vibhanga Sutta. For one who has developed right meditation, their concentration increases and they withdraw from the need for sensual stimulation. For one who has developed right meditation, their concentration increases and they withdraw from unskillful mental qualities. For one who has developed right meditation, their concentration increases and they enter and remain in the first jhana, the first level of meditative absorption. Joyful engagement and pleasure in the Dhamma born from withdrawal. We've spoken about this. We take refuge in our cushions, in our practice. We do this to calm our minds. It starts to feel pretty good after a while. This is going into the second jhana, brief description. For one who has developed right meditation and their concentration increases, their directed thoughts and mindful evaluation quiets. They enter and remain in the second jhana. The second level of meditative absorption, which is joyful engagement and pleasure born of deepening concentration, free from directed thought and mindful evaluation, and confident within. So we see here that we actually enjoy this process of letting this automatic eye-making, automatic ignorant thinking that we have become conditioned to. We actually like to practice this meditation and stop that for a little bit. It starts to work. One who has developed right meditation, their concentration increases and their joyful engagement fades. Equanimity arises, and with mindfulness of pleasure in mind, equanimity arises with mindfulness of pleasure in a mind united with its body, with the body. They enter the third jhana. The wise know this as equanimous and mindful, a pleasant abiding. Now he talks briefly again about the fourth jhana, and it's very similar. For one who has developed right meditation, their concentration increases, their mind rests in equanimity, neither pleasure nor pain have a footing. They enter and remain in the fourth jhana. Their mindfulness and equanimity is pure, free of wrong views, rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. This monk's is right meditation. So Sariputta has again explained here that we have to practice the right way. We have to hold the right thing in mind. And that's what this whole story is about with Ananda. He's trying to tell him about where he's taken that inquiry. It's very vast, you know, perception, non-perception, nothingness, this world, the next world. He's trying to find a place to put anatta. He's really misguided here. And Sariputta, the general, is really, you know, direct in how he gets him to understand this. And now we'll go into some of my words and commentary on this. By practicing meditation and becoming more familiar with the four states of meditative absorption, we are able to develop restraint from sensual stimulation and unskillful mental qualities. We've talked about this. It's the need to I make or personalize this abundance of sensual contact that we have with the world. And by practicing meditation and becoming more familiar with the four states of meditation absorption or jhana, we're able to hold in mind the four foundations of mindfulness. When we become skillful with the four foundations, we're able to acknowledge the quality of our mind more often. That's on the cushion and off the cushion. We don't lose our minds as much as we used to. I think we'll all find that. We further develop more profound concentration over time and often enter in the four states of jhana as our mind becomes more equanimous or calm. That's what we're doing here. We're practicing to calm our minds. It's also important to note that the four jhanas are in the context of impermanence and are subject to worldly causes and conditions. We can learn to be gentle with ourselves and practice the concentration factors of the Eightfold Path, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, to become more acquainted with our practice, our minds, and developing states of jhana, meditative absorption, that are associated with an authentic Dhamma practice. We all know fruit takes time, it takes water, and it takes sunshine to grow, and that's what we're doing here. We're nourishing our practice, nourishing our minds with the right nutrients. Sariputta is giving those to Ananda. He's planting the right seeds for him. Sariputta has explained, through proper concentration practice and developing insight, or vipassana, as we know the term, into Four Noble Truths, ignorance and dependent origination, the four foundations of mindfulness, the four jhanas, sounds like we're finally getting somewhere here. He's actually getting through. However, there's one more thing Venerable Sariputta explains, and he explains it in certitude at that. Sariputta subtly references the developing skillful quality of equanimity. And we can take reference from another important sutta called the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta as guidance for our experience with equanimity in our own practice. As we practice meditation and increase concentration over time, our mind becomes more supple and is able to release wrong views and develop a calm, non-personalized view of the world and worldly events as they occur. It is an accurate description of spaciousness that allows for this flexibility, this ease of being that we often find ourselves in as we continue with Dhamma practice. We've experienced what it's like to have a calm mind, and we know it's pretty great. So, briefly from the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta to explain how jhana practice impacts the spaciousness of our mind. I think this is a very, very apt description. Again, these are the words of the Buddha. A wise Dhamma practitioner understands, in this same manner, an agitated mind, lacking concentration, independence on contact, will feel feelings of pleasure, feelings of pain, or feelings of pleasure nor pain, of neither pleasure nor pain. A wise Dhamma practitioner understands that with the cessation of self-referential sensory contact, feelings of pleasure or pain or neither pleasure nor pain are stilled. I think we can use the word calmed as we're talking about it. I think it's a very appropriate word. Now there remains only a mind established in equanimity, luminous, pure, supple, and spacious. This is a great metaphor. Just as if a skillful goldsmith were to take raw gold and through skillful effort transform this raw gold into a refined and flawless ornament, malleable and luminous. The gold would now suit the goldsmith's purpose. Just a little bit more from the Dhatu Rubhanga Sutta. In this same manner, one whose mind is established in equanimity, luminous, pure, supple, and spacious, knows that if I were to direct my thinking toward non-physical dimensions or infinite consciousness or infinite space or infinite emptiness or nothingness, or the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, I would know these as fabricated. A wise Dhamma practitioner does not fabricate or mentally construct for the sake of self-establishment in this physical realm or any fabricated or imaginary non-physical realm. That's the modifier. Fabrications abandoned, this one is not sustained through craving. This one is released from clinging to anything in the world. Just one more bit from that. Released from wrong views, ignorant of formable truths is the modifier. This one is no longer agitated. Their mind is calm and well concentrated. This one knows their mind is calm and well concentrated. Now this one knows that their mind is calm and well concentrated. This one knows birth is now ended. A life well integrated has been lived. Task is complete. There is nothing further in this world. So, bringing it back to Sariputta, to Ananda, to sort of his closing here. And he said, Ananda, I was sensitive to the cessation of becoming, cessation of the sensitive to unbinding. I was sensitive to the, and then third here, I was sensitive to the arising and passing away of all phenomena. When we have a calm mind, each moment provides liberation from establishing more ignorant thoughts and views of anatta. Wrong view of self, related in ignorance to four noble truths. We know what that is. This is that experience of unbinding that we've been discussing. We flourish by returning to the sensation of breathing in our body. Our mind does not personalize feelings and thoughts, and we incline our mind towards, anybody? Calm. That's why we're doing this. This is how one is sensitive to the arising and passing away of fabrications and all impersonal worldly phenomena, just as Sariputta explained to Venerable Ananda. We have the direct experience of a mind united in its body in the human life experience. We have experienced cessation of wrong views for ourselves. We know and have felt release of our own contributions to stress and suffering. However, getting towards the end here, don't worry. However, we are sensitive to what is relevant to awakening. And this is elaborated on the sutta we just referred to, the Dhatu Rubhanga Sutta, when the Buddha is saying, a wise practitioner does not establish themselves in this, their imaginary, non-imaginary, the whole, the list of them there. And that's what Ananda was asking about. We need to be sensitive or mindful. That's what we do with sensitivity, where mindfulness is developed to what is relevant to awakening. And that's the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. This is an awakened person who taught this. And as we're learning here, he taught it with such effectiveness that the Buddha's not even in this talk with Sariputta and Ananda. This is Sariputta giving the Dhamma that was given to him from the Buddha to another. We understand that there are numerous other doctrines, practices, philosophies, sciences, beliefs, systems, and realms of existence that are not fit for attention, or in this case, mindfulness, in the context of the Dhamma. All of these other teachings and doctrines lack the understanding of the Four Noble Truths and therefore are prone to perpetuate and further ignorance. They simply serve as a distraction to establish ignorance outside of what is actually occurring, an ordinary human experience of life as life occurs. It is skillful not to confuse those other systems of belief with the Dhamma, as they do not address the initial ignorance common to the human experience. This is the breakthrough and understanding that the Dhamma represents. So again, we're getting now towards the towards the end here. I appreciate you staying with me. I apologize if it's gotten a little out there, but I'll try and tie it up for you. So again, we're, the direction that Sariputta is giving our Ananda here is inward in nature. He's saying, hold on here. Whoa, whoa, whoa. We got to do a U-turn. You know, you got to, you're in the wrong area here. You know, north of the border, so to speak. He's advising that the Dhamma, an authentic practice, and we know that it's an authentic practice from John's Sutta last night. We know the standard of the Dhamma. It's the standard of release, unbinding, and cessation. That's the Dhamma, as we're finding here. And that's the liberation that we have available to us in this lifetime. It's necessary to understand how we fuel the fires of dukkha that arise within us. And that's the final piece here, that Sariputta is explaining to him what's fit for holding in mind, what's fit for mindfulness. And that is emptying of ignorance, unbinding of wrong views, experiencing cessation of all phenomenon, and practicing the Noble Eightfold Path. And the reference to actually knowing cessation, the personal experience that Sariputta is going to elaborate on there, is given with the metaphor of just as a wood flames fires, or excuse me, a wood fires, flames arise and pass away, he was sensitive to unbinding and wrong views. That, by using fire, that's a way to, you know, make it, he's explaining that this is authentic. I've done it. I'm recounting to you, as I sat in concentration, probably on numerous occasions, but on one occasion as he's recounting here. Sariputta has become sensitive to his own contributions to stress and suffering. And that's why we can use other teachings that reference flames and our own contributions, such as the Loka Sutta, when we extinguish the flames of passion and desire, or the fire discourse, when we refer to the world being a source of dukkha and it's a flame, and we can become in contact with that. We see the lack of wisdom there. So again, the final lines from Sariputta subtly refer to awakened right view. Through the wisdom of cessation, Sariputta was mindful of becoming, unbinding, cessation, and knowing cessation. And we have experienced this ourselves, and that's how we can take true refuge in the Dhamma, through the direct experience of cessation of our own ignorance. That's, again, back to Sariputta, the cessation of ignorance. And we have... that give you one more need that does tie this together as well. But I'll ask a question if anybody wants to answer it. So how do we do this? How do we live in the world and allow life to life as it occur, not personalizing our experience? Anybody, maybe not one of the teachers, if they wanted to, how do we do it? Oh, I don't even know how to unmute. So
commit to our practice.
Good. Yes, that's it. I'm looking for a little, thinking of something a little bit more related to the internal process. It's not a trigger. It was just how we do this is when we find ourselves personalizing worldly phenomenon, events and thoughts and so on, we come back to our sense of cessation of breathing and we refer to the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. This is not me. This is not mine. This is not myself, and this is not who I am. And we all have heard that before. So that's sort of the boundary of the talk. And I have one little, like I said, extra credit piece on here that just food for thought. It's an epilogue, actually, because, you know, Ananda is an interesting character, I'm finding out. And again, maybe the experts can go on to this as we finish here. But he seemed to be an interesting character. He was known to be a bit of a ladies' man, I do hear. Let ladies into the Sangha. So sensory distraction was something in his life. He did became awakened, about 2 months after the Buddha passed, is what I do gather. And good for us that he did, because he was able to make it to the first Buddhist council and recount the Dhamma. If he hadn't figured this out, we'd be somewhere else. And again, I don't know if that's entirely correct, but I did some looking around. So The last piece, again, Ananda, in another sutta called the Adhikangara Sutta, known as the single quality for awakening. It's an interesting piece of backstory epilogue, as I said. Ananda is encountered by a householder, Adhikangara, and proceeds to impart some of his acquired wisdom from Venerable Sariputta. In an interesting piece of continuity, Ananda expands on the four jhanas and explains the impermanence and cessation of fabrications. A householder, Adhikangara, went to Ananda, this is the words of the Buddha, the Buddha's chief attendant, and asked him if there was a single quality where one engaged in the Dhamma, one would find release. This is the same guy that asked the question like we just heard at the beginning of this. When one has quieted the mind through mindfulness of the breath and has abandoned sensuality and unskillful qualities, one enters and remains in the first jhana. Motivated by joy for the Dhamma, and continuing jhana, he goes beyond fabrication. One continues with mindfulness, imbued with goodwill, as John said, many of us are here imbued with goodwill, thank you to our Sangha. They enter the second, third, and fourth jhana. As concentration deepens, their mind is unbound, spacious, free of the confining yoke of ignorance. Another appearance of our favorite term. Ignorance is a yoke. It's choking us. It's not fun to pull this anatta thing around. They are, again, as concentration deepens, their mind is unbound, spacious, free of the confining yoke of ignorance. They are imbued with unlimited goodwill, with compassion, empathetic joy, their mind resting in equanimity. Ananda goes actually back into those deep states that we know he loves to again. He does that a little verbose. I tried to not to do that again. They, the wise practitioner, disregard these phenomena and incline their mind to the cessation of ignorance. Nothing remains to provoke the becoming of further ignorance and the birth of continued suffering. They will enter into a pure, bright awareness, a pleasant abiding, calm equanimity, as we've been discussing, totally unbound from clinging to wrong views, never to lose their mind again. I've heard that before. This, my friend, is the single quality taught by the Buddha to be developed so that the unreleased mind of a Dhamma practitioner who is mindful, ardent, alert, and resolute in the Dhamma would attain release and security from the yoke of clinging to views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Venerable Ananda, it is as if a Dhamma practitioner were seeking an opening onto treasure and all at once realized 11 openings to treasure. There's a little subtle reference to 11 that doesn't really need to be expanded on here. In the same way, I was seeking a single doorway to the ending of all fabrications. All at once, you taught me 11 doorways I can take, all leading to the single point of cessation from fabricated views. So, that is the tie-in from Venerable Sariputta's talk to Ananda that helps bring his focus back to where it needs to be, not in physical realms outside of humanity or other systems, beliefs, perceptions, non-perceptions, consciousness, infinite consciousness. We've gone through a lot of those descriptions. Sariputta is telling him that we practice for calm, we practice to become skillful with four foundations of mindfulness. We practice to empty ignorance of Four Noble Truths. We continue to practice the Eightfold Path. And with developing wisdom and profound right view, we continue our practice to develop and experience what a calm mind state is like. Thank you. So we mute here. I forgot. I guess I got to remember how to teach here. So I appreciate everybody being here. I know that I might have got something for all of you here. This is fun. This will be the fun part. So we have the thread and a lot of thread. And we're still going. We went through a lot of thread here, but hold on. Look what's at the end. looped it back. We loop it back. We keep, you know, and now Rom can take the thread, or Mac can take the thread. So, it was a dense teaching, and I tried to expand it. I think it required a little of that, sort of the jaws of life to give this some vitality. And I'm very grateful that the practice has allowed me to unpack it a little bit, because it, probably a few years ago, I just would have, you know, just, oh, that's nice, throw it on the refrigerator or something. You know, I mean, I would glance over some of those words, and the context of looking into objective meditation really was a breakthrough for me. When I saw Sariputta was, you know, he, when the Buddha wasn't around, this is the guy who taught the Dhamma. You know, he explained things to people. He taught, he was everything the Buddha wasn't, everything the Buddha was when he wasn't there. He was the guy. So, you know, this is an awakened person, or awakened teaching. So it took me something to really get that out. And the object of meditation really was something I connected with. That broke through for me for mindfulness, for the Four Foundations. If anybody would like to add anything, or questions, or specifically maybe related, if you wanted me to clear something back up. I know I kind of jumped all over, so I apologize. And hopefully we kept it on the fairway.
Can I say something?
Please.
I remember reading this sutta when we did the Vipassana study, it came through as really dense then. And thank you for teasing all that out, and showing us, you know, the human side of Ananda. It is amazing that somebody who is really as steeped in the Buddhist teachings as Ananda could still come up with a zinger like this, and then, you know, and Sariputta very calmly puts him back in his place. It gives you hope for yourself when you come to John, or to anybody else with, you know, once your mind's completely twisted up in stuff that you've been diving into, there's a way back.
Yeah, it's beautiful how that other sutta, you know, he got it. He got it in time. Another piece that I flushed out that was neat about Ananda was that as the Buddha was looking, he was the Buddha's attendant, I think, for about 25 years. And as the Buddha was looking for a new attendant, it was a big hubbub. Everybody was sort of like, wow, I want that, you know, and bam, a bunch of people wanted to be the Buddha's attendant. Ananda, kind of, again, looking into, you get to know him a little bit, he played it cool. He didn't show up. He didn't show much interest. He kind of laid back, and they were like saying to him, Ananda, what's going on? Wouldn't you want to be considered for the Buddha's attendant? And Ananda just sat calmly and just said, I know the Buddha will choose right. A couple of days later, guess what happened? He chose Ananda. So it's a neat way of, again, knowing now we get to even meet the Buddha directly, that the Buddha knew where to meet people where they are. He knew Ananda was a special case. You know, he's got a brilliant intellect. He's intelligent, charismatic. He's got life in and out of the Sangha, seemingly, and you know, he needed a little discipline from the four-star general to get him back in line.
All right. Thank you.
Can I say something, Kevin?
Please.
I just like,
I guess I didn't go around. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you didn't go around the room, so I just figured.
Yeah, no.
I just want to thank you for bringing so many other suttas in to explain this. I want to listen to your talk again on the recording and go back and look at those other suttas as we go through, because that was very enlightening to have those other suttas connected, and sort of, it was sort of like a, you know, a bouquet of suttas.
Full house.
Very nice. And they were all connected. They all worked together. And I just wanted to ask one question. The sutta that talked about the goldsmith.
Yes.
What sutta is that?
That is the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, I think, to satiate your appetite. Maybe hearing a little bit about that later from our other teachers.
Okay, great.
Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, yeah.
That was very dense, and you brought it to us very clearly. Thank you.
As I'm getting, this is my real first experience with teaching. I think what I would have liked to have done, or what I would like to do, is to have the suttas available for you so you could have them to read along with. I think that might have helped. I appreciate that. I realized that that was a lot of in and out with other suttas, and I apologize if my cadence changed or anything. But I appreciate you saying that, because that was very essential to this. Getting extracting out the meaning was to have the supportive suttas, and that, because I got this, and I was initially looking at this just like, what am I going to talk about here? I mean, and that's okay too. It could have been a 10-15 minute to sit and dust it off, but I thought that it really did, as Matt and the other teachers we've been talking about, it did need a little restoring. I mean, this is a gem of a teaching here. These teachings are gems. Okay. Get it when you receive it, a gem. What would we like to do with the gem? Well, we'd examine it from each angle, we'd hold it up to the light, we'd clean it. We want to find out where it came from, right? We want to look into it a little. And that was really fun. In fact, just last night or so, I was saying, wait a minute, I should look into Sariputta and Ananda. I should have something to say who they were. This is worthy of that. This is a moment that, in effect, changed Ananda's life. This is that big here. This is what set him back to where he got to in that final sutta. He figured out and was able to teach the single quality for awakening to another person. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Excellent job for your first time teaching. And you can always just fall back on your charm.
I was in hair and makeup for a couple hours before this. Gotta get myself down. That was my joke. It wasn't that funny. Thank you very much. I had some fun with this one. Like I said, it changed like about 24 hours ago, maybe from all of your support and being with all of you and John. It changed from, wow, how am I going to do this, to, wow, I got to get this out. I mean, this thing is simmering. There's a lot of flavor I want to release here. I mean, really... gonna overcook this thing. Well, if we want to just continue to be aware of the Eightfold Path for a few more hours here, and maybe we'll reconvene if nobody has anything else. And John, would you like to call on John at least, maybe? Or
well,
no words.
Would the four teachers stay online after we end our session? Well, I'd just like to talk about something. And
I can't hear you, John.
Oh. If the teachers could just stay in the room, just so we can talk about something after we end the session. And we'll be back at 6:45 tonight for our evening session and for Matt. Does anybody else have any questions or comments around on Kevin's outstanding job?
I do. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi. Kevin, I just wanted to say how delightful it was to hear you and to see how enthusiastic you are about teaching this and learning about it. You can tell the hard work that you did in studying this so that you could present it to us, and I've never heard you speak before, and so I felt like, oh, I get to know Kevin a little bit deeper, and I thank you so much, and I heard you say, I'm sorry if I'm sorry that, and there's nothing to be sorry for. It was just brilliant. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And John, did you say quarter of seven?
Well, the next session starts at seven, so the meeting room will be open at quarter of.
Okay, thank you.
This is Mary. I just wanted to say thank you, Kevin. Often I feel like I'm hearing things for the first time, and I don't recall whether we've ever woven four sutras together like that, and I found it fascinating, historical kind of human review of the characters. So I thought it was fascinating in addition to being very educational. I think the phrase sensitive to, I heard that phrase, whether it was to cessation or unbinding, quite a few things. It's just another use of a word in a unique way that helps illuminate things for us. And I really, really appreciate that. And I too will look forward to listening to this again on the recording. So thank you and great job, Kevin.
Kev, I just wanted to say something real quick. First of all, well done. Thank you for your teaching. Thank you for teasing out that sutta. It may have been a tough nut to crack. But I really liked how you kept bringing it back to one of our, tenets of the Sangha that we take true refuge in, which is that we practice for calm. And that's the focus of our Dhamma practice, and that's why we practice and what we practice for.
Oh. Yep. Your mic is off, Kevin.
I actually started to learn that as I became acquainted again with the four jhanas, that equanimity is, that was striking me there, equanimity, calm. So that was, appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say too, Kevin, by the way, awesome job.
Thank you.
Knocked it out of the park. Spike the volleyball. I really, really Wonderful. Liked the background information about Ananda and Sariputta, and that was a brilliant technique that a lot of teachers use to hook the audience with that. And not that this audience really needs hooking, but
I thought it might after this.
Yeah, I felt like I wanted, I felt like I was not to. I don't know why I'm doing all the movie references, but I felt like I was watching a prequel.
Yeah, I tried to think about that a little, like the Butch Cassidy thing, something did like need to recreate these two.
And also that you highlighted, the question that Ananda asked Sariputta, which was a question, and kind of an ignorant question of how can I be aware of something and not aware of something? And it is simply that you're aware of what is occurring and you're not aware of fabrications. And you really made that very clear. So thank you. Thank you for your teaching.
Do I need to mute? I'm trying to reach Young.
Hi, Kev. That was a great job on pulling together four sutras. And what actually goes by without recognition is that you actually pronounce them so well. I can't hardly pronounce any of them.
That's just time of hearing everybody else say it.
It's that evolved mind you have, that young evolved mind you have. But I love the way you actually, there was a lot of interlocking moments there, and you pull that off effortlessly, which makes me think that you have a pretty tight grasp on on your material. I also like the way you brought us back to to jhana meditation and the four foundations of mindfulness, as did Jen. You know, she brought us the same way. So you guys seem like you're, you know, there's a common message here, and it's in jhana meditation and the correct way of doing jhana meditation. I also like the fact that, like, you tied it in with quality of mind, and you know, we have to recognize where our minds are at. If our minds aren't, you know, in that, you know, that space of equanimity, well, then they're being distracted. Somehow they're being distracted, and that distractions are generally wrong views of ourself and ourselves in relation to the world. So all this came through in your teaching, and I deeply appreciate it for focusing to a place where I could understand it better, and that's through jhana meditation. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mike. Yeah, that really is meaningful. Everything everybody said is just very near and dear and heartwarming to me. I mean, the best compliment I could have received is that this was authentic to the teachings, and that's what I tried to maintain. And actually, while doing that, to learn something, how my own practice could evolve. And I learned something about equanimity and states of jhana, and to be focusing my mindfulness on that, to really work it a little more. So
yeah, it came across nicely, very nicely.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely, thank you.
I just want to echo what everybody else said about how much we appreciate what you did. And I can see the effort that went into bringing that all together. So thank you.
Thank you so much, my friend. It's great to be on another retreat with you, sort of. See you again.
So I'll take
it. Yeah. And,
I appreciate the sports references, too.
Our friends from the West. Great that you joined us too. And
thank you, Kevin. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kevin. I agree with what others are saying. The effort was just outstanding. And really stimulated my interest to read carefully those other suttas that you presented. I could tell. Just a treasure trove of information and a lot of connections. Appreciate all of your hard work in assembling that, and made me wonder if you could somehow distribute the list of those different suttas that you mentioned so that we can kind of circle back and keep digesting that. Thank you.
I will. It's really appreciate that, Trevor. I mean, you, I think I speak for not only the teachers, but the other sangha members, and for John, you've added such a level of discernment to our sangha in a great way. You have such a great grasp on Buddhism and the spiritual tradition, and it's so great to have you join us. And you often are saying so many things that are insightful. So I appreciate that. That goes both ways, my friend. I really appreciate all that you bring to our sangha.
You go to the sutta on the website, you'll see a lot of linked articles for further study. All the articles on the website are like that.
Yeah, I'll send out a little follow up with that on there. Sure. So, all right. Well, I guess, do we do metta now, or do we do that later, or we'll do it
later on.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. I'll see you. The teachers will stay for just a few minutes, and I'll see you all about 6:45.
Hi, everybody. See you at 6:45.
Boop, boop, boop.
This is where I get in trouble.
Becky, I'll see you about 6:45. Where's Jen? There's Jen. Jen's still here. Kevin, you did an outstanding job.
Awesome.
The reason why I'm asking you to all stay, the there's six additional suttas. I would say you put a little bit, and I'm not, please, you did a wonderful job. I would say you spent a little bit too much time on the six additional suttas and not enough time on the sutta in question. Again, I'm not putting it down. You were able to hash it out greatly. And the only reason I'm saying it now is let's just be mindful of that, that we can add so much to one sutta that sutta is lost in the bigger picture.
Right.
Rather than seeing this really, you hit it. It's a very succinct and pithy sutta. But other than that, your understanding of the Dhamma came through so clearly. It was just remarkable. But as we're going forward as teachers, it's one thing to reference another sutta. It's another thing to read a good portion of that sutta while we're trying to read another sutta. And the one really, I don't know if I call it a criticism is that it wasn't clear to me what the Sariputta Sutta was. I mean, I know it, but what part of today's talk was the Sariputta Sutta and what wasn't? That's what was lost on me. And that's, but the effort you put into it, Kevin, is remarkable, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, effort's one thing, but the message is more important than effort. So, I mean, I think that.
Well, the message was outstanding. You could, from the feedback by the Sangha, we know it was.
Yeah. I it was challenging because a lot of the suttas, I didn't want to read as much as I did from those other suttas, but I couldn't refer to them if I didn't have a little bit of, you know, I couldn't just read like a skillful goldsmith does that. I guess I could have, but I thought that,
Here's the thing, Kevin. You know enough of the Dhamma to just, and there's a difference between an opinion and what you know, and we don't need to get into that right now, but you know enough of the Dhamma to explain the sutta without getting deeply into another sutta. And that's where the, I think a little bit more authenticity would come through that way. This is how I understand this, rather than saying this is how the Buddha understands it. You know, I do it all the time. I reference other suttas, but again, there may have been just a little bit too much of that here. So, and you mentioned something about the Dhatuvibhanga Sutta. It's something to reference. The Buddha said this in the Dhatuvibhanga Sutta. It's another thing to read another sutta while you're teaching a sutta. You know, that. I think that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, if you can do like one line or two lines off of another sutta, that would probably work a little better.
Right. Yeah, I had.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.